This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes-Sinclair. Welcome to the show. Hello, folks. Today on the Partnership Playbook, I'm joined by Joe Davis, award-winning author, speaker, and longtime senior leader at the Boston Consulting Group. Over nearly four decades, Joe has helped build and lead BCG offices around the world, launched its US public sector practice, and co-founded BCG Digital Ventures. He's also the author of The Generous Leader, a guide to leading with collaboration, equity, and heart. Joe's career has been defined by building partnerships that shape organizations and communities, and I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Joe, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and thanks for the very kind introduction.
You bet. Look, let's dive in because I want to. I'm desperate to get to your book and to learn a little bit more about what it took to bring all those insights together. But you know, you spent nearly four decades at BCG. I know many folks that have come from BCG and other great organizations like it. I'm looking forward to seeing what was the through line of your leadership journey through that practice, because there are very clever people that come to BCG. There are, you know, fantastic work that goes on, and you would have seen some awesome projects. What's that through line of leadership been like for you over that time?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, I guess two things. I mean, one thing, especially of the work, but I'm going to go to leadership in a second. You know, through line would just be constantly facing interesting questions with our clients. Where they really want to, when we team or partner together, to use your word, you know, get to outcomes that are very positive for them. You know, if I think about the through line from the leadership perspective, it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about it. You know, really, I think what I learned more and more and more as the years went by is the power and importance, or maybe you could say critical nature, of connecting with people. You know, really your people, your clients, et cetera, and really working hard to understand where they're coming from and knowing that they want you to help them grow. And if I may, I'll tell two quick stories. You know, one was, when I started at BCG, this was, you know, as you said, almost 40 years ago. BCG were pure strategy consultants, highly intellectual people. And quite frankly, many of them were introverted, I learned, because I would walk down the halls and these partners would just walk on by looking down, never glance at me. And I thought, gosh, they're rude. I mean, I literally thought they're not even trying to connect with me. Now, I later learned, especially this one fellow, he's just massively introverted. He was afraid to look at me, which I found strange. But, you know, the importance of actually engaging people. And I think about my career, maybe partly because I remember that beginning, but I was, you know, worked very hard in engaging everybody as I passed by, et cetera. And it shows respect, of course. But it also, you know, builds following or builds, you know, inspiration on other people's part to really try to do their best if they feel like, okay, I'm being acknowledged, I'm being respected, I'm part of this. Then I'll say 30 plus years later during COVID, you know, I'm still learning this lesson of connecting and understanding someone else's perspective. We were trying to decide what, and I was running North America at the time, we were trying to decide what, you know, do we need to do for our people now they're at home? Of course, we got them screens and stuff like that. But what do you have to do? And especially a lot of them are young people, very young. I think when I was running North America, if you can believe this, 70% of the staff was under 29. And
wow.
I don't know, 60. So wow. What the hell do I know about them? And somebody called me up and said, Joe, you know nothing about these people. I mean, not nothing, but you know, you live in your nice 7-bedroom house. Your kids are already through college. You're just in a different world. And this woman is a woman named Debbie. She goes, you should really call and just talk to some junior people about what's going on for them. I remember one conversation, I forgot it. I called him and he was on his bed in his bedroom, which you remember we're all working at home somewhere. And I said, well, what are you doing on your bed? He said, well, Joe, you don't get it. My apartment's very little. I have a bedroom, a living room that blurs into the dining room that blurs into the kitchenette. One week I'm on the bed and my wife gets the couch with the coffee table. And the next week we switch. And here I was going from room to room to room in my house. I love to travel and I couldn't stand being in the same place. So I just, my kids were all moved out. I just go to another kid's bedroom and use that for a week. Then I go to the basement. So I was really out of touch with where they were coming from. So, you know, the power of really, I mean, it's so funny because you just think you know, you think you learned that, but here it was 30 years later, I was still being reminded and learning the importance of connecting with people and understanding where they're coming from.
It's amazing, isn't it? It feels like COVID was a long time ago, and we had a very interesting lens into people's lives. I was running a biotech business at the time. We were moving between highly contained laboratories, doing our work, and then the only people on site. Normally, there would be hundreds, thousands of people on site, and then it was just a dozen of us. And it was like walking through the halls of a very quiet, very eerie kind of place. And then you jump online, you'd see people, literally in their studio apartments, sometimes with kids, and just thinking, how are you doing this? Like, this is just, the level of connection really went through the roof.
I know it's funny because, yeah, we won't, but just the fact that we weren't together, but we all started connecting even more personally closely than we ever fathomed we could. You know,
That's it.
it's really,
It's
it's very
extraordinary.
interesting.
I actually hope that we don't lose that, to be honest.
I
I think
know.
that it's
I agree with you. I agree
yeah.
with you.
Joe, you've been described as a leader who brought generosity to consulting and leadership. And when you're doing projects like this, and I speak from almost a third hand experience point, I've been on the client side of working with companies like BCG. My wife was a partner at a firm like that. And there is a lot of work that has to go on, a lot of corralling, a lot of understanding, because you're bringing an organization along on a journey. Was there a moment early in your career where you realized generosity could be a powerful differentiator?
Yeah. Well, and first off, let me just define what I mean by generosity, because people could be thinking,
Of
pay
course.
higher salaries, you know, promote them faster than normal or something, which those are all nice, but those aren't lasting, you know, if you get that once a year or something. What I mean by generosity in the context of leadership is where a leader gives of themselves freely, without expectation of direct personal benefit, to enable others to grow, develop, and thrive at their full potential. And, you know, when I think about what that means, it means, okay, I am the leader, got to step out of myself and make sure you, Phil, are humming at your best. And there's a couple, again, a couple of stories, but I think very early on, I had a lesson. This is when I was actually at Procter & Gamble. I was 25, been promoted to manager, 24, 25, 26, I can't remember, right? Three reps who were in their 40s. So I thought they were old guys, you know, now they'd be my kids' age. And I was scared of them, to be honest. I'd ride with them every 2 weeks. And I'd never give any feedback because what does a 24-year-old kid know who learned it from the book in 2 years? And then it came time for year-end review. And I remember Guy Rich, I wrote everything down, he should do better or whatever. Started going through the review with him, and my boss was in there. Maybe 3 minutes in, he goes, "Geez, Joe, what the heck? You ride with me every 2 weeks, and you've never told me any of this?" And I think he used a few swear words along the way. You know, I can't remember. I just froze, I'm sure. But, you know, there was a lesson there. Even this 40-plus-year-old guy was looking for me to give of myself without my own fears and all that to help him grow. You know, he wasn't just like, I don't need you every 2 weeks. It was like, hey, buddy, how come you never told me anything over the. It was really, it took me a while to absorb that, but it was pretty eye-opening. Another just kind of thing I think over time, the power of the generosity as I just described it is, you know, I think part of it is you've got to share your humanity. I mean, I think we just touched on that, the need to bring your human self to work. People want to see that started to happen with the BlackBerry, in other words, technology and, you know, COVID, you and I just described how it changed. And I remember very early on, I think I'm just a person willing to share of myself. When I was running like the DC office, you know, if I'm talking a staff meeting, I might tell them about my kid who's, you know, just going to college. I would talk about it and be like, what are you talking, you know, or if something was emotional to me, I'd choke up. Now, not everybody chokes up. But instead of that being a bad thing, the feedback I'd get is, wow, it's so nice to feel some humanity in here, some person. And I just really want to make sure I work with you, the team, to grow this sucker. So it wasn't. You know, it wasn't a negative thing at all. It was actually a thing that inspired people to be part of the team. So, you know, if you think of generosity as you giving of yourself so others grow and feel inspired, motivated, I think those are some of the lessons I learned. And you keep learning them all the time, but learned pretty early on, especially that silly one about being afraid to give feedback. I mean, what a great lesson. Thank heaven I had it at 24 instead of 44 or something.
And sometimes that happens in people's lives, like you say, a long way into that tenure or in their working relationship. I find that it's interesting when we often hear people say, we'd like you to bring your whole self to work. I'm sure you've heard that a million times. And it strikes me that it's difficult for anyone to contemplate what that might be without there being any kind of guardrail or introduction to what that should be in the context of work, right? Like if you're working 40 hours a week, 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, whatever the case is, if you love your job, there's a good chance you're going to bring just about everything you've got to it. And if you don't, you're probably not going to. Just, this is an off-the-cuff kind of question. How does that work in your experience when you hear leaders say that? Because, you know, I'm sure that would be a wonderful thing for people to do. I'm sure things would improve in the workplace, but, you know, not everyone's up for that.
No. And I think, I think about that over the years. To say that to me, you know, what I interpret is, okay, let's be all in as best as we all can to get whatever we got to get done. But then if you're going to do that, to your point, okay, if you want me all in, you have to take me as I am. And if I had a bitch of a night last night and I need to tell somebody about it, someone better listen or I can't be all in, because otherwise my head's all messed up. So it's actually your job, Mr. Leader, to understand a little, not everything about me, but where am I coming from? You know, if I have a child in the hospital and you're asking me to be all in, you better think about my child in the hospital, engage with me on that and, you know, help me move past that. And I'll tell you, it's interesting, just when you said that, I had a colleague who was, you know, he cared deeply, and I think he did. He acted like he wanted people to be all in, but he thought the thing was he needed to be perfect. Now, he happened to be good looking. Wife was good looking. His three kids were good looking. He had one of the bigger clients at BCG. Everything was perfect. And so everybody was petrified of him because nobody could be him. And he said, one time I said to him, feedback is at night. He said, well, any feedback for me? He was working for me, leading an office. I said, well, yeah, I got to tell you, people don't think you care. Oh, my. It was like I smacked him in the face.
Yeah,
what do you mean? He said, Joe, the next morning, he said, I didn't sleep all night. I mean, that's a slam. And it occurred to me, I didn't realize what I meant, but what I meant was you never bring your human self. You never say, you know, your kid had a bad day or you fought with your wife or you just lost a deal. I mean, not fought with your wife. You don't say that. But, you know, you never let us know any cracks. So how can we show cracks? You know, we're just scared all the time because we can't match. It's and of course, so he was human. He wasn't that perfect. He just didn't know how to show it.
I really love that. Let's turn to the book that you've written. It's called The Generous Leader, I should say. And you outline seven leaders. I would love to walk. Sorry, you seven principles. Seven of that book. Yeah. Let's walk through each of those seven. So the leaders who are listening to this, mostly entrepreneurs, mostly chief executives who are working through their own chapter of leadership right now. In my experience and in my coaching, I see a lot of leaders who are actually still processing the back end of COVID. They're still looking to how they recenter. Organizations are being built, restructured. AI is here, a lot of change in the world right now. So hearing what these seven principles are, how they can be applied, I think is going to be very useful to them. We're going to link to this book, folks, in the show notes so you can take a look at this at your leisure. But Joe, let's walk through these so we can give people some insight about what it actually means to be a generous leader.
Okay. And I promise I'll walk through all seven briefly. Otherwise, you know, I've listened to people sometimes describe their X number of things for 30 minutes. So first one I say is connect personally and deeply, really generous communication. And what I mean by that is you just mentioned change. If you want your message to land and have them hear what you're hoping they hear, you have to think about how you're connecting, how you're giving that message, but where they're coming from and what they're hearing. I mean, just briefly, I use a rule of three, which I've heard a lot of people say, you know, you have to tell somebody three times, because the first time they're just saying, what's going on here? What's he on about? What's the game? The second time they're thinking about, you know, last night their kid couldn't get his homework done. So they're not even listening to you. And the third time they say, ah, I see. Okay. You know, engage in this.
Yeah.
Someone told me an interesting story. Someone, the Russian figure skating team, someone was watching this and she called me up and said, oh, this is amazing, Joe. They do really wild, unusual moves three times. Because the first time the judge goes, whoa, what was that? Second time, they, oh, I see. And the third time, they actually absorb it and can score it. It's really fascinating.
That is fascinating. That is super fascinating. Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two is quite important. Be curious, you know, generous listening. And by that, I mean, first off, ask questions, and really try to understand what is in the other person's head that you don't know, so the two together go better. And that's one that can be hard for people. Some people think they have all the answers. And try to also understand where they're coming from. But this is such a critical piece. And also, I think in the context, you talk about change and dynamic organizations. If you're not understanding where your people are, I mean, maybe you can yell at them and boss them around, but I'm not sure how much they'll do for you.
Nope.
Next one for me is, you know, welcome everyone, generous inclusion. And by that, I don't mean what might some, I just mean actually include people outside of just your own little leadership team who's going to tell you often what they want you to hear, or maybe what they think you want to hear. You know, invite people into the room, an analyst who did the work, and actually say hi to them when you walk in, so and ask them a question. That'll be nice because they're probably scared if they're in a senior manager. But, you know, it just sends a big signal. One colleague of mine said, Joe, you used to invite me in. And I'll tell you, I was so excited to see beyond just what I was doing that I said, okay, I'll try to do more. How can I contribute in bigger ways? And I didn't ask him to. He just felt included and wanted to. Then the next one's stand up for them, be a generous ally. I mean, I actually happen to be one that believe some people have structural disadvantage, especially in my country. Yeah. And I think it is the role of the leader to give them a shot. And by this, you know, I don't mean do it for them. I mean, actually help open doors. They can walk through and fail or not fail. Yeah. That's what they want to do. I mean, you coach, but you don't do it. You just give them a chance to do it. And if they don't cut it, they don't cut it. That's, you know, life's fine. The other one, of course, which we touched on, you know, recognition and development, you know, generous development. Which it was not an example of that first story I told you when I was afraid to help the guys grow. But if you want people to be really growing, and that, you know, that one's a couple, first off, three things I'd say. One, you have to spend the time to understand, where is Phil coming from? What's Phil good at? What does Phil need to do? How can he leverage the good? And then you have to be direct and clear. There's nothing worse than mushy feedback. You know, hey, I enjoyed your podcast, but you know, there'd be a few things I wish you could improve. Maybe tell me more. Oh, no, I'm afraid to tell you anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Be
clear. One time someone, we were actually letting a person go. He was not going to get promoted. I was the head of the office. His career rep was in the room, and she was telling him, you know, you're not going to make it. You're not going to get promoted up, and we're an up or out place. Well, she was mushy and going around. Even I thought, what are you saying? Finally, he looked over me and said, Joe, am I getting fired? I said, yes. And he said, thank you. The whole thing was done is, but, and it wasn't thank you, I don't want to be fired, but thank you for being clear. Now let's engage in what I do about it. Then I say another one I think is quite important, which is so easy too, is small acts, big impact. I mean, really capturing generous moments, you know, chances when you congratulate a person for a job well done. If they have a birthday and you remember it, say happy birthday, or put it in your calendar so you do remember it for your team.
Yeah.
Send an email. You know, I mean, I got those stories about that, but I'll get through all seven. And then last is quite important. You know, I use the word be vulnerable and give up the mask. And, you know, that's, we kind of open with that. You know, this, that not everybody, there's different degrees of being vulnerable. And first off, simply saying, I don't know, is a vulnerability.
Yes.
It frees up other people when you're the leader. Because if you say, oh, I don't know, they can think, oh, it's okay not to know. So now I won't be stuck when I'm sitting there stuck and afraid not, you know, and don't know what to do and afraid to ask anybody because I don't want to admit I don't know. Hmm. So you can be even more emotional on that and you get different benefits. But just like the friend I talked about, who's always, we all thought he was perfect and no vulnerability. It's hard to follow him.
We share a lot of these principles in common. And one of the areas of being very comfortable to say, I don't know, is I think one of the force multipliers when it comes to leadership. You know, we are often taught, and I'm ex-military, that there are processes, there are things you should know, there are things you are taught. But one of the things I think we're taught more than anything else is to introduce vulnerability to your team, because the true strength of any unit lives inside the individuals of that unit, not at the top of that unit. You know, whenever I'm thinking about vulnerability and saying, I don't know, it often I find there are two people that there are two types of people that receive a message. One of them is, I don't know, great, let's work it out together. Or I don't know, uh-oh, I thought you'd know. And and then you have then you can see that sort of a almost a fear in their eyes about, well, I don't know either. Does that mean we're stuck? And the answer is, well, no, we're not. It's just that we don't know. And I follow that up with, I guess my reflex and what I was taught to do many years ago was to think about what are the three scenarios in that context which are helpful to explore and break apart, so that if the next step is genuinely unknown, there is a way to then say, well, look, in this circumstance, or that circumstance, or this circumstance, and it gives people the optionality to explore something different. And I'm curious about how that works in your world, because you know, you would be overseeing so many projects, so many clients, so many moving parts in an organization like that, that just having three scenarios for one situation is going to be significant, but they're all over the place. You know, when that was the case and you were faced with people that just looked back at you and said, look, oh, I don't think he knows, does that mean that none of us know? Like, how does that play out for someone like you in a leadership role that's so significant?
Well, that's interesting, because I actually think maybe it's the context of the consulting world, which by definition is such a curious world, right? And trying to analyze to come up with answers. Because what I would find I also would say is your first, you know, I'd say, hey, I don't know either. So now let's all start brainstorming and figure it out together. It's just free people. And, you know, a colleague told me a story. I said, well, what's like something you're vulnerable about? One of your vulnerabilities? And he said, I'm afraid to say, I don't know. It was a black male, so it was a little bit wrapped up in, you know, extra pressure in his mind. And he said, if the team was working and got stuck and he could see they were going to turn to him, he'd leave the room before he'd say, oh, I don't know.
Right.
Now, you and I both know that's unproductive, because now they're just going to stay stuck.
Yeah.
And he said, the first time, he said, oh, I don't know either. And I think this is what's most commonly happened in my world. Is, oh, you don't know. We don't know. Nobody. And the energy just burst of, okay, let's start brainstorming. Let's start thinking. The roadblocks disappeared. So one other quick story. I remember I was like a third year consultant. And I didn't know how to do some kind of math that I had to do to finish this problem or the question, whatever I was working on. So I walked down the hall to the senior partner who was, you know, overseeing me, and he was a good guy. He was very tough, but I kind of knew early, don't waste time. And that's the biggest problem with being stuck. You waste time and time. And I walked, I said, hey, Steve, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? Well, essentially, he didn't know either. And he could have told me, hey, go, I'm busy. Come back in a half hour. Got the answer. Then showed. And he said, oh, I don't know either. Let's walk down the hall and ask Philip. He'll know. So, you know, he just sent so many signals to me. It's okay to say, I don't know.
Yep.
It's okay to ask for help. And he's going to go out for help. I mean, what a great lesson 3 years in my job, you know? And I didn't think any less of him. I didn't think anything. I just thought, okay, it's okay. Let's get it done. It's just, let's get it done.
We're on the same team. Let's get it done. It's a great way to look at it. You know, Joe, you've just touched on this idea of generosity being a real force multiplier. I think we both agree. When people are skeptical of that as an idea, how is it that you help them understand that actually, no, you're framing, it's fine for you to have that point of view, but your framing might be wrong, because generosity is in fact a default human condition that we all probably need more of than less of in order to move forward.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you think of my country, and if we could just all stop and listen to one another, at least understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
You could disagree. More power to you. But
yep.
But anyway, you know, I think when you say that, the skeptics, I think when I said in the introduction of my book, if you really don't care, you're not going to want to read this book. But you know, I think the thing wrong with that is, first off, I am not saying this is, you know, unicorns and fluffy clouds. This is about, I mean, is there, you know, you have to get results as a leader. You have to get outcomes. A good colleague, a client of mine said to me, he said, Joe, you know, leaders have to remember outcomes matter, but the sooner you step past yourself and connect personally with your teams and help unlock all of their great human potential, that's when you get to the best outcomes.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you got to redefine that word and not think, I mean, I told you the story about the guys getting fired. I mean, you fire people as a generous, you just do it clearly, you do it fairly, you do when it's right, you help them move on. That's generous, because you want them to be the best they can be. If they're failing in your place, if you're a generous leader, you get them out because they'll find how they'll succeed somewhere else. And this is where people get wrong. Well, I thought you're just going to be nice. Oh, it's yes. I mean, yes, because you're, you know what it is? You just care. And if you care, you can say a lot of stuff that's harsh. One time I had a colleague who was a high performer in Europe, came to the United States, underperforming, and he's a partner. You know, after 3 years underperforming as a partner, you're kind of out. And I had to talk to him, and I said to him, Allard, you have three choices. You go home, you quit, or I fire you. That's all I said. I said, oh, my God, thank you, Joe. Okay, I'm going home. Some said, how could you be so blunt? Well, I knew he was a high performer. He was hurting inside. I'm sure he's sitting there every night thinking, what the heck am I going to do? I'm failing. Yeah. This is not me. All I had to do was remove the roadblock and very bluntly saying, pick one. He picked. He's a superstar again. So the thing, but then the other point I'd say is, remember what we're talking about here is you helping and ensuring and enabling that your team is humming at their full potential.
Yeah.
Really humming at their full potential. Your company wins, your group wins, your people feel good. And by the way, you benefit too. Now, if it's all about you benefiting, they'll smell it and say, what the hell? But if it's all about them thriving and you win too. So that's my, you know, I think if you think about this as I want the team to hum and that's being generous, well, what are you going to argue with me now about? Well, I don't know how to do it. Okay, that's fair enough. Well, I don't care enough. All right, well, you have to work on that. Well, I have all the answers anyway, whether you're naive.
Yeah, this is where the key, I think, lives for the next generation of leaders. I will never forget, you know, Brené Brown's line, clear as kind, right? And whenever something is, you know, I can feel myself sort of meandering in language and not finding the right way through the message that needs to be said. As soon as I feel myself even going close to that place, I can tell that, you know, there's a lack of clarity and that kindness has gone out the window. As a consequence, the generosity is gone and then people just don't know what's going on. So it's very important. It's very important to keep that in mind.
Sorry, I'll cut you off. If you
go ahead.
Do it because you really care about the other person thriving, doing well, performing, they know it. You can make mistakes in your words. You can trip over yourself. They're going to give you grace because they know you care about them.
That's it.
They think you're a jerk and you're just yelling at them. Well, good luck to you. I mean, it'll work for a while. You won't go to the highest echelons of leadership and you won't be an exceptional leader. You might be a good manager, maybe. I don't know. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, well, I guess that this is an interesting segue because there is a way to have that conversation internally, right, where you've got a relative degree of, I guess, control, the environment. You know how things are working. When you get outside of that, and I guess the next question is that, you know, you've been part of building partnerships of real consequence, you know, from working with the FIDC during the financial crisis, which feels like a long time ago now, but I will remember that the day that Lehman collapsed and then all things happened across the board and across the market. You know, you had a front row seat to what was going on there. You know, what sort of lessons in those kind of experiences taught you the value of bringing that kind of generosity to play? Because we can talk about being generous and being clear in our own environments, but when there is a lot at stake, you know, a lot at stake, that can, I think, in some people's minds sort of go out the window. We could probably default back to what we behave like, what we think is important to try and get this job done almost instinctually. How has that played out when you look back on those kind of events?
Yeah, well, I think I'm going to blur a little bit of leadership and management because if I think about those kind of events and making sure the outcomes are as good as they can be, I mean, the first thing, I don't know the first, but think of my brain is first thing, okay, do we have real clarity on the objectives and the goals and are we aligned?
Yeah.
And if I think about serving clients, you know, there's more than one story where the client says, you have to do this for us. We'd say, yeah, but that's not really what you need to get done. You need to do this. Mm. So either don't hire us or change the topic, change the outcome. Because we're going to be wasting money over here. Now, oh, man, what are you doing? You're telling us we're wrong. No, I'm telling you, we want to get to the best outcome and we don't want to waste your money. Mm. But so there's something about, now that's not well, you might call that generous because being honest, but then I think the next thing that's so critical if you're really teaming with others to try to get something done. It's just clarity on roles, you know, who's doing what.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you mentioned the FDIC, which that FDIC, for those who don't know, is the organization that oversees the banks in the United States, which for many years they used to say they had elevator wars, races, because no banks closed for like 20 or 30 years. So they had
Yeah.
nothing to do other than make new policies. But now all of a sudden, 100, 200 closed a year. It was a big deal. And I was thinking about this, you know, the other thing is, you do, this is more of managing, you do have to make sure these partnerships or the relationship like that, the work is grounded in good old fashioned, solid, meaningful facts and analytics. Otherwise, you're just not going to talk to each other. But then on the generous side, if that's really going to work, you know, you have to make sure you're, especially in that case with the clients, connecting with people, being curious, understand where they're coming from, asking their questions. Why is the math like this versus that? Otherwise, they're going to be threatened, right? You know, what do you know that I don't know? I mean, I always said to my teams, a very important trait is engage the skeptics and uncover the knows. Because if you want to drive change, you know, rarely does a knowologist, rarely they're just a blocker because they're a jerk. Usually they know something. It could be this little or this that you don't know. And if you don't figure that thing out and fix it, whatever you're trying to do isn't going to work. And, you know, I was thinking you mentioned Sheila Bair, the FDIC. So Sheila Bair was the leader of the FDIC. And we did some work. When, the first time we met with her, first off, she came 2 hours late. And she said, well, a senator call. And she says, you know, the pecking order is the president calls, the senator calls. Then maybe, I'm not sure where the con she goes, congressman, maybe, maybe not. But so she, sorry guys, but you don't rank above the president's, which of course. She came in the room. We were going through math that said what the FDIC was doing was overly favorable to the banks that were acquiring those who were going out of business. And the taxpayer was giving away too much money more than they had to. And you know, you could see, you would imagine the finance man, team would be threatened by that. You know, they came up with this math. And I remember she, but we had made sure the CFO was included, blah, blah, blah. And I remember she turned over and to the, her CFO and said, is this math right? He said, yep. And she goes, okay, I want to change now. But, you know, so it's the grounded in facts, and it's the fact that we had worked with him and teamed with him and engaged him that enabled that change to happen. The nice thing about it, the nice fun thing about it, she goes, okay, she said to her chief of staff, I want to meet with these guys every 2 weeks and make sure I'm not late. Now she can't control that part. But it was you know, it's interesting. So just the power of connecting, engaging with others as you're trying to team with them. And make sure they're part of the process, as opposed to, well, we're the consultants, we're smart, we know all the answers in our little head. You know, that's not what I would call generous listening or inclusion, you know.
Joe, can we double click on that for a minute? You know, when she looked at the CFO and asked that question, are these numbers right? And he said yes. If you looked at that relationship, no doubt he was under pressure in that whole circumstance, probably more than anybody else in the room to have the numbers right. So when that question is asked, you want to make damn sure that you know that person is confident. Building that relationship with him through your team, can you recall what that process was like? Because I'm sure, you know, as you said, there was probably not a lot happening at the FDIC for a long time until there was a lot going on. And I'm sure when people are looking at a CFO for answers, for guidance, you know, you could walk in the room and it'd be another person you had to serve, had to engage with. What was forging a relationship like that like in order to get that clarity so that whole organization could move forward?
Yeah, well, you said, do I remember? So, of course, I can't remember specifically that one, but I do think it's a standard thing. Sorry, that's not a very good word to use. But, you know, we, at least my teams, were quite good or tried to be about truly engaging who that person, you know, the key people, bringing them in the work, understanding what they wanted to get done out of this, where their head is, what they're coming from, and listening really carefully, because it's so easy to not listen to what they're. You can hear the words, but can you hear what's in their head? And that's the critical part. And then, of course, we never, there would be, you wouldn't dare go in the room and share some analysis with the person's boss without having shared it with them. I mean, shame on you, no offense, but that would really be stupid. I mean, it would be ungenerous to a degree,
Yes,
you
indeed.
know. And so those are the kinds of things is, you know, bring them in early, understand where they want to go with this. You know, this situation, everything, as you said, it was so fast, so unusual. Mm-hmm. Nobody was going to chew anybody out terribly for something just because the world was, quote unquote, collapsing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter whether it's pressure or no pressure. I think the same pieces are involved. Where are they? What do they want to get done? And bring them into the process. You know, in this case, include them just like you might a junior person in the room. And,
yeah.
And you know, sometimes people, you know, just don't like it and they're going to block you or they're going to fight you. But that now we are being hired to get to the answer. So then you got to be true to your values and help, you know, whatever. But you've got to try your darndest to make sure that people feel involved. Doesn't yeah. always. But there's examples where sometimes clients just wish you weren't there. You know, but that's.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Story. That's a different story, right?
Joe, we when we were preparing for this conversation, and I was so excited to meet you, it was because when we talk about partnerships, and we often are talking about in the context of how does one organization partner with another to either grow faster, distribute something, secure supply chains, new innovative product development. In a consulting arrangement like a BCG, where it is built on partners, where mm-hmm. people might not understand that in the true sense. The circumstance here often is that when you are trying to launch something like what you did in DC with BCG Digital Ventures, you're essentially partnering inside the organization to make a whole bunch of new things work. I mean, for all intents and purposes, BCG Digital Ventures is a new product development from inside right. the organization. How is trust, for those who don't know what this is like, who have never operated inside this kind of environment before, how is trust built and alignment happen when there are so many people pushing hard to move the organization forward and all of a sudden somebody says, you know what, we need to create something different inside that is going to be a massive future value driver for us. But it's going to take you to be a little bit less focused on your day job because I need 1% of your attention to drive something new.
Yeah, or I'll tell you another question that comes in a partnership like that is the people on the inside say, well, we do it this way. Why are they doing it that way? Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, they're creating something new and different. Yeah. They do it this way, they do it that. That was the biggest challenge I found. I mean, DV is a good example because it was, you know, BCG was not a technically oriented place at all. I mean, right. IT and tech, you know, we brought in a technical group. You know, they're still cracking tough problems for the CEO, but then they were trying to create the technical, the products to make it happen. You know, they're trying to, you know, like whether it's tech, you know, but they were an attacker to a company and they were helping the company attack itself. Well, a couple of things. I mean, you know, I say this all the time. I say again, I mean, first off, with the team that was joining, there was a lot of listen. What do they want out of the partnership? How do we make sure it works? I mean, that's kind of a first thing. But then with the inside group, there is probably, you know, two or three things. I mean, one thing's important is whoever is the navigator, the godfather, you know, the person's helping, they have to run the traps or block the, I mean, literally, you know, like, yeah, I know the people processes BCG use are these, but this is a different kind of place. There's only 9 of them. So we have to, you know, we have to figure out how to use the best of BCG's, you know, people processes, but not bury it on them.
Yeah.
So it's pretty critical that somebody owns the translation between the two. That person has to be in a position such that they can, you know, command respect. The other thing I think is important, which is this is a duh, is, you know, ensuring the right people get on side. I mean, I know when I was on the West Coast, when we brought DV in, and I was running the West Coast at the time, of course, I had to get had North America on side, the CEO on side, then we had the executive committee had to be on side. So, you know, you've got to run those traps just like anywhere or something. Yeah. And then you get that set up, then you just go like, you can't see me, but you know, you just push away all the silliness, you know? Mm. And then the last point is the organization that's coming in, it better get some kind of results pretty damn fast.
Yeah.
Inside of a place like BCG, a partnership, because you know, it's everyone's like, it's deliver or not, you know. Mm. So I don't know if there's any, I'm not sure if that was terribly insightful, but.
Yeah, look, I think the main insight here for me is that whenever there is something new, I think people will often give it grace to see if it's going to work. But when there is an urgency and a culture of urgent progress, it doesn't offer a lot of time, and that's the beauty of the culture.
Yeah, so, right. No, that.
You know, if it's going to survive, it'll survive, but it has to be done at that same level of urgency. And, you know, whenever I think about value is how it's created in a partnership, you know, yes, there's financial, but often some of these smaller ventures trying to get up, if they're trying to a small company partner with a large one, there is a different kind of value they're looking for compared to the larger organization, the value they're looking for. And often that just does not get discussed, right? It's just, it's assumed. Right. That if you're small, then you can punch up to our weight and we'll be able to do something together. If we're large and you're small, we can shower you with some stuff, which actually might not even be valuable to the smaller player anyway. So finding that middle ground and having that discussion very clearly, I think is the thing that helps circuit break that. But it is time bound, I think would be my.
Yeah, time bound is the point. You just said something, another thing. Sometimes these small pieces, they aren't going to deliver profit at the level this big machine that's working so well and is really lean, but they may add huge value to the partnership, to the firm, that isn't necessarily a number. I mean, the fact that we could say, hey, we have this DV thing, clients would talk to us that might not ever have talked to us.
Correct.
How do you, and if you sell something, how do you count that? And of course, the partner that sells the work from the old school, he doesn't count it. Oh, no, that didn't matter. I did everything. So you've got to have a little bit of that too in a partnership type, or if even any organization, the salesman, I did.
That's right. In a large organization, the same thing happens. That's right.
And that's actually a curious value. Or not, that's an important value too. It's hard to quantify, but then somebody better be also, you know, shouting that from the, you know, the treetop. So wait a minute, we never would be working with so-or-so.
That's it. Joe, before we go in, I've got two or three other questions for you. Where can people go and learn more about you and the book? Because I think there is something really special here, particularly if you've spent time in professional services and you're trying to grapple with what does it mean now? Where can people go to learn more about your work?
Well, you can. I do have a website, joedavis.com, but it's probably just a lot of pitch, you know, PR kind of stuff. I mean, the book is, you can get on Amazon. I'm doing little 30 to 60 second blips, videos on LinkedIn that are short enough that they could be interesting. Now, they're my wisdoms. You may not care about my wisdom, but they're 40 years or 65 plus years of life of wisdom.
Yeah.
That you could listen to some of those if you're interested. You're making me brag about myself a little bit. I've never done that before, but that's one thing you could do, actually.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I've seen some of those, and they are valuable. And I think that the other thing as well is that there is such a deep well of experience here, which I would strongly encourage people to look at, particularly if you've spent any time, like I said, in professional services, or you're looking to do something which is innovative, because there is so many parts of your career, I think, Joe, which people will look at and just go, there is... they've navigated so many different material changes in business and commerce, particularly in the United States, where people can learn a great deal from. So I strongly encourage it. I think, you know, one thing that really impressed me with my team brought back the research for this conversation was in relation to the Center for Inclusion and Equity at BCG. And, you know, I was interested to see more about that. I firmly, firmly believe, and I'm driven by one of my values, is the genuine fear of missing out on an important perspective. And I'm fueled by that in some part by trying to understand different people's points of view and knowing that I'm missing things. When you founded that center for BCG, why was it founded, and why did it need to exist, given the kind of work that you were doing?
Well, I mean, first off, I was founded because I believe deeply in that topic. Yeah. But let me go to the whys. I mean, if you think about, you have, whether, you know, that partly was also, I mean, we were quite focused on equity inclusion inside of BCG. That team, that group was to help clients that want to drive change in their own organization on those topics. But if you think about it, I mean, equity, everybody in your organization, or you're saying, you know, if you create a partnership, has to feel they're at least getting a fair shake out of the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a chance. You know, if they're going to be inspired to participate fully and really give their best and all that, you know, and if they don't feel like the playing field is somewhat, well, it ain't even, but at least they have a chance to, you know, get it somewhat equitable, you're just cutting out a whole set of people, whatever it might be. I'll just say, not be controversial, 70 years ago, women, you know, women were out of the room. They came in the room, but they couldn't get promoted. You know, well, you're not inspiring them to perform at their highest level if they don't have a shot. And inclusion, I think, is the same thing. If someone just doesn't feel included and included by management, and, you know, like same point. Okay, well, I'm here. The doors are open to me too. I can, if I really go all in, I can also have the opportunities others. If they don't feel that, they're just not going to go all in. People might figure out how to break through the barriers. I got it. I mean, I could hear, you know, hard ass people say, oh, come on, Joe, the best will figure it out. Okay. But that's, if you're running an organization or doing a partnership with somebody, you want everybody to figure it out. You want everybody to hum at their highest potential.
That's it.
Then you win. Everybody win, you know, and waiting around for the Darwinian best to make it. I get it, but I don't think that's the best way to run something, to run a team, you know, run an organization. So I think it's really about if someone wants to feel inspired, give you their best, have the best shot, they better feel included and they better feel they have a shot.
Yeah.
So I've never given that speech like that before, but that's kind of that's from my heart, my friend.
I love it, Joe. And I think the thing as well, and this harks back to something you said right at the top of this episode, which is that whenever you are trying to communicate and doing it three times, I think leaders need to deeply understand that if somebody is not getting it, it's the sender's responsibility to work it out, right? And it might take you six times. Keep trying until someone gets it. But, you know, if it's made its way through in three, I think you're winning. I think if you've got a way to just recognize and just see the signal that people aren't, it's just not working for them, then change the tact, right? Find a way to break through.
If I may, do I have time for a quick story? A client of mine, Joaquin Guato, and Joaquin got promoted to CEO of Johnson & Johnson, which, you know, massive company. He did something clever. He has someone on his team. He'll just ask them, somebody he trusts, not junior, you know, what are people saying I'm saying? It's something he'll go check. And this one guy said, well, that's they're saying, isn't that amazing? And it's a
I love guy. That.
Will he tell the truth, but not right below him? And this person said, well, sir, everyone says you want to cut costs. And Joaquin said, well, I never said that. He said, I'm saying, you know, we're a highly matrixed, complicated organization. We have to streamline the organization and get the complexity out. He said, yeah, I know. You just said you want to cut costs. He truly meant get rid of the complexity. He didn't mean cut costs. He didn't care. And of course, he wants to keep it efficient. But that's, you hear complexity and simplicity, and everyone in their brains, fire. You're going to fire me. And he's like, holy moly. So he just dawned on him, these words ain't working, you know, and that was only his fault. that's harsh, but, you know, it was his words that weren't.
No, I wish I am now going to start asking that more. I think that's a really astute, you know, tactic to use to see if people are getting it or not.
Well, he does, now since you say, he does one other thing. If he's giving a big talk to a town hall, his whole thing, he'll bring a small group in and give this talk and say, what did I say? And, you know, he'll take words. If he said the word, you know, like, I don't know, if he used one kind of word and they heard a different, same principle with a different word, he'd switch to their word.
Yeah, but
then he'd say, if you went home and told your spouse at dinner or what Joaquin said today, what was the message? And then, that's not the message I meant to say. And he'd go back and rework it because, you know, it was him sending, they weren't hearing what he thought he was saying.
That's it. Joe, I've got a rapid fire set of questions I generally ask at the end of these episodes, which I'm looking forward to asking. Before we get to that, I do have one last one, and it's to do with partnerships. It's to do with the inherent power of doing things together, which I think you're uniquely qualified to answer. What do you think people are missing in the world right now about working together as partners? And this can be in a firm, it can be across firms, it can be across government, whatever the case is. But what are people missing, you think, right now?
I think thinking deeply about the mutual, the potential mutual benefits. You know, what is both of us going to get out of this? I mean, and then engaging on those benefits, clarity on them, you know, and then action in them. I think that might, and I think about when BCG, sometimes we do partnerships with tech firms, and we would get so enamored, I won't say any names, but we get so enamored by these fancy names, you could guess who I would mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. Oh, it's a nice, it's a partnership and blah, blah. I said, well, what are we going to get out of it? Oh, well, you know, it's a good company and maybe they'll open some doors for us. Yet they got something very direct out of us. They were better. Mm-hmm. That wasn't part, but they were better at using partnerships.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the problem there was if both sides aren't really clear on what they're going to get, it just does eventually collapses, you know, or if one side schnookers themselves into thinking something wonderful is going to come when it ain't really there. It's also, well, then you get animosity eventually.
Yeah. But
so I wonder if that's the, you know, there's probably, you could probably tell me nine more things, but really what do we both want out of this? And can we both get ourselves there? And is it valuable to both of us? At least of some equal value, not mathematically equal, but this is so damn important to me and that's so damn important to you and we're going to get there together. That's what I, you know, it's interesting because I had never thought about that question when I thought about the BCG partnerships, and that was always the thing. We thought we were going to get more than we really were. And I think these clever tech firms knew better. I won't say they are, but.
Well, I agree with you. I think this idea of single dimensional value is dangerous. Right. I think and the people will posit that, you know, I come to you assuming that you know what value I need and we won't have a language. It takes time to build a shared language to work out. Actually, it's not what I need. What I need is this. Can you give me that? And if the answer is no, no problem. But if you can, let's have a deeper conversation. And I've got to say, you know, 80% of my work is about forging that language. It's as simple as that.
Well, I just think about all my consulting projects. I learned this from my mentor, but let's have clarity on the objectives and clarity on the scope. And you got to lay it out and agree to it. Because if you don't, 6 weeks, someone's 6 weeks in. Well, wait a minute. I thought we were doing this. Well, I thought we were doing that. Now you wasted 6 months. 6 weeks. You argue who's going to pay for what. No, my gosh.
Yeah.
All you had to do was fight out the clarity at the beginning. Not always easy. Maybe not fun, but you don't get it done.
Very worthwhile.
That's more true of partnerships. More, you know, there, you tell me, but I'm sure.
Yeah. Listen, Joe, let's go through this rapid fire. And let's get question one. So complete this sentence. Partnership is?
Mutual respect, driving to incredible outcomes, benefiting all.
Love it.
Benefiting both. Maybe benefiting both. Yeah, that's what I think.
Awesome. What content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything. When I ask this question, people can give me Netflix series. They might give me podcast episodes. Like, it doesn't matter what content it is. What are you loving at the moment?
Oh, that's so funny. I thought you meant some serious thing. You know, well, I did. I'm reading a book called Hail Mary, which is kind of like a single guy that goes out into outer space because there's some life form that's eating up the sun. And he's out. I don't know, halfway through. It's kind of cool. On a serious side, though, actually, I was thinking about, I am reading the book Abundance right now, which just talks about really a description of why my country is where it is. And it's interesting, just the idea of, you know, humanity, either you call it elitist or it's kind of tribalistic. And if there's lack of abundance, you figure out how to team together, actually, to get it done. If there's so much abundance, you don't need, you're not giving anything up, you can get yourself caught in, you know, sides and kind of things. I'm only halfway through that book, but I think it's pretty interesting to read.
Yeah.
How to turn that and solve all that is a different question because there is a lot of abundance, even, you know, well, I'll stop right there.
When you think about the worst piece of advice you received in your career, what is it and why?
I think someone, you know, along the way, people have said, you know, Joe, you don't have to be so emotional. I don't agree. I'll be me, you be you, you know. And if someone doesn't want to like me for it, then whatever. So that's the thing that I just didn't agree with when I heard it.
I saw a clip recently of the comedian John Candy, and a big part of his, I'm sure you remember his work, and
yeah,
you know, one of the lines he is most famous for saying, which I understand was unscripted on a film that he did, which was, "I really like me." And it takes courage to one, acknowledge it, and two, to say it out loud. And I think, you know, it's a big deal. Question four. So when you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Well, you know, for me, I engage deeply with the other party. You know, what do you want and need? What do we want and need? How do we get there? But it's really this engagement word. Engage, listen, ask questions, engage. Because it goes back to the same thing. If we're not clear on where we're both going, somehow something's going to go sideways.
Yeah, I agree. And final one, what are you deeply grateful for right now?
That one's easy. My spouse of 44 years, my Amazing. Four children, and any day now, my daughter is due yesterday, I'm with her, my ninth grandchild. That is what I'm most grateful for. Number nine, maybe this afternoon, we'll see.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, I wish for a very uneventful delivery and that everyone is doing very well as a result.
Thank you, Phil.
That's awesome, Joe. Listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real privilege to talk to you, and I'm excited for what everyone's going to learn from this episode. We're going to send people to the book, and we're going to send them to joedavis.com so they can learn more about you and this and the great life you've lived to date. So, on behalf of everyone, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes-Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.